The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Cochran, and Judge Kirk, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. The third case this morning is A21-1367, Maureen McCulloch versus William Swanstrom and Deed.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Obviously, we're appearing by Zoom. I had some issues, technical issues earlier with my internet. And if that happens to either of you or anyone else, please let us know so we can stop the clock and make sure that we hear all of the arguments. The cases or the oral arguments are being recorded and will be posted on our website within a day or two. We have the same rules that we have as if we were at MJC. So please state your name for the record. I know you're both are experienced oral advocates. And with that, Mr. Boyd, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you. Thomas Boyd here on behalf of Relator Maureen McCulloch. Good morning, good morning, Your Honors, and good morning, Counsel. Ms. McCulloch has appealed the determination that she is not eligible for unemployment benefits. She respectfully requests that the court reverse that determination and find that she is eligible under the applicable exception, which we will discuss shortly. Ms. McCulloch is a non-lawyer who represented herself in the deed proceedings and commenced this appeal as well as filing an informal brief. She requested assistance from the MSBA Appellate Practice Section pro bono program, which we agreed to do, and the court graciously allowed us to file a formal brief and appear today. So on behalf of Ms. McCulloch, we appreciate that accommodation. The material facts that are relevant to this appeal are few and undisputed. Ms. McCulloch was employed to provide 24-hour care to William Swanston in Duluth, Minnesota. Mr. Swanston is an elderly, disabled man. She began that employment, I believe, in November of 2019. In late January, January 29, she provided Mr. Swanstrom's daughters with notice that she was going to leave her employment and return to Connecticut. Ms. McCulloch made this decision to leave her employment with Mr. Swanstrom in order to care for her own elderly and disabled mother who resides in Connecticut. It's important to recall, and I don't even need to state this, we all are painfully aware of what was going on in early 2020 with the onset of the global pandemic. Ms. McCulloch and her mother were greatly concerned by these events. And Ms. McCulloch, whose father had died just earlier that month, was very concerned about her mother's welfare. Ms. McCulloch provided undisputed evidence that her mother was more than 72 years old, had a history of pneumonia and asthma, had a history of...
Mr. Boyd, can I interrupt you for a minute?
Certainly, Your Honor.
With regard to your statement that she provided undisputed evidence that her mother had asthma, correct me if I'm wrong, but in my review of the record, there wasn't any testimony regarding asthma at the evidentiary hearing. The only information relating to asthma was provided in the request for reconsideration.
That's my understanding of the record as well, Your Honor.
Okay. And then with regard to information provided in a request for reconsideration, that isn't evidence in the record for purposes of the ALJ's decision. Under 268.105, dealing with a request for reconsideration, the statute provides in subdivision 2B, or actually C, that in deciding a request for reconsideration, the unemployment judge must not consider any evidence that was not submitted at the hearing, except for the purpose of determining whether to order an additional hearing. So in my reading of the law, the information relating to the asthma can't be used to argue that the ULJ erred in determining whether or not that medical necessity was met. do you disagree, or what basis would there be for this court to look at that information regarding asthma when it wasn't part of the evidentiary record?
I can't disagree with you in terms of what the statute states, but I can provide the court with my understanding of what the ULJ did, which was citing that authority, but nonetheless taking into account what had been submitted, which I believe can fairly be characterized as amplifying and clarifying Ms. McCulloch's testimony about her mother's condition, and did not either change his ruling or, at a minimum, which I think would have been permitted under the statute, provide for a further hearing on that matter. Apart from that,
One follow-up related to that then. In your brief, I don't see you arguing that the ULJ erred by not granting an additional hearing because of that information relating to asthma or blood pressure.
We do not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The ULJ's decision on reconsideration does nonetheless state that I can't remember if the ULJ was male or female, but the ULJ did consider that and nonetheless determined that it would not be appropriate to either order a rehearing or change the determination as to eligibility. Those are undisputed facts in any event, and I recognize what the court is stating as to what was before the ULJ in the record at the hearing. But in the record before this court, those are undisputed facts, and I don't think that either relator or either respondents would disagree with that. The fact of the matter is, Ms. McCulloch's mother was elderly and was at risk. And the fact of the matter is, she left her employment and did care for her. We believe that satisfies the exception in subsection 1-7 Romanet 2, that those are disabilities, and we're all aware of the heightened risk that the elderly faced. The question here, in my view, is whether or not Ms. McCulloch was required to expressly request an accommodation, which is part of the statutory exception. Here, our argument is it would have been futile. And I want to clarify what I mean by futile. There are two types of futility in my reading of the cases. The cases that Deed cites and relies upon have held that you cannot establish futility in those instances in which a reasonable accommodation might have at least have been possible. And each of the cases that they have cited to are instances in which a reasonable accommodation would have at least been possible. It may not have been likely, but it would have been possible, and the employer did not have the opportunity to review that. And specifically, I'm referring to the Grammon case, the Johnson case, Anderson, Fleming, and the Kripe-Shurek case. Our case is different than that. There was no reasonable accommodation that could have been possible in this case. It's undisputed that Ms. McCulloch was leaving to care for her mother, who lived in Connecticut. And my Google map search indicates that Connecticut is at least 1,400 miles away from Duluth. It would not be possible for her to continue to provide health care for the elderly and disabled Mr. Swanstrom and also provide for her own elderly and disabled mother. The ULJ asked whether or not she discussed a short-term leave of absence. That too would not have been possible. We all know that the duration of the COVID pandemic was uncertain and it continues through today. So that likewise would have been impossible. So that the type of futility that we're arguing the court should apply in this case is different from the cases cited by Deed. It's a futility that is not based on whether the employer may have or would have been likely or not likely to accommodate, but instead whether a reasonable accommodation was possible at all. And here, I would submit it's unrebuttable that a reasonable accommodation would simply be impossible.
Mr. Boyd, that there isn't any precedential case law that recognizes such an exception, futility exception of the type you're asking us to apply. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I would even state further, I've looked. And I I have not found one. The Michael case is as close as I've been able to come, that in an unpublished decision, this court, at least a panel of this court, has discussed the prospect or possibility that may be appropriate in certain circumstances. And our argument is here are those circumstances, a situation that is fairly novel. And it occurred in the midst of, or not the midst, at the onset of a devastating pandemic, where people were greatly concerned about their parents, particularly their elderly and disabled parents. That when applied to this case, I think justifies application of a futility exception to the statute, which again, in Michael, unpublished, of course, but nonetheless recognize that there could be circumstances that justify this type of exception.
I certainly understand.
Mr. Boyd, I'm looking at your fourth argument.
Hello?
Is that Judge Riley? Your fourth argument?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me? I have an unstable connection again, apparently.
I can. You I can hear me. I'm sorry. Yep.
Okay, I'm looking at your fourth argument, which says that if we find that she isn't eligible under the statute, that we should look at the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. I'm wondering how we get to that issue. I don't think that's properly before this court. Am I wrong?
It's in my brief, and I'm embarrassed to say I can't answer that directly, and perhaps Deeds Counsel can explain, but I did query my client about the status of that matter. She did apply separately subsequent to the commencement of this appeal. It's my understanding she applied separately for that relief, and it has been denied. And I'm not aware of whether she's going to pursue that further or not.
But that would be for a separate appeal then.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. That's not something that I consider myself an expert on. So again, Respondent's Counsel may provide something more informative than I. But I, based on the fact that she had filed a separate application for that relief, I would tend to agree with you that would, if she wishes to challenge that would be part of a separate review.
Thank you. You're not exactly conceding, but you're not agreeing.
That's a fair way to characterize it, Your Honor. I appreciate that. One other matter that I would, to the extent that it plays into the court's consideration is the issue of the record as to what Ms. McCulloch communicated to the Swanstrom sisters about her reasons for leaving her employment to go to Connecticut. In her appeal from the initial determination of ineligibility, and I believe this is Exhibit 3 to the hearing transcript. She stated in response to a question, what reason for quitting did you give your employer? And she stated, quote, relocating back to Connecticut due to the impending COVID to take care of my elderly mother. My father passed away January 1, 2020. The next question, or the subsequent question, to whom did you speak? Quote, his daughters, Debbie and Jane Swanstrom. Next question, what was the employer's response? Quote, they understood. In the hearing, the Swanson sisters seemed to suggest that they did not receive a written record of the basis for Ms. McCulloch's reasons for living, leaving. I think there, at the very least, there may have been some confusion, because when the ULJ asked Ms. McCulloch whether or not she provided this explanation, he specifically asked whether she had had a record of having provided that information. And according to the transcript and the attached email, she did not make that, she did not provide that explanation in writing, but she did state in her appeal that she made that communication to them, which I understand to be a verbal communication. So I believe the record does provide evidence that she was clear in explaining to them the reason for her departure. And the ULJ did not make a finding on that. The ULJ made a determination that there was no showing of a specific medical condition to justify her leaving the employment, but no determination about whether she communicated her reasons to the employer or a credibility determination between the witnesses. I see I've run out of my time. I appreciate your patience. Thank you.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Attorney for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Froelich and I represent the respondent, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. We ask that you affirm the decision of the unemployment law judge as it is legally and factually correct. On January 29th, 2020, Ms. McCulloch told her employer that she was leaving to move back to Connecticut to be with her mother. To be eligible for unemployment benefits, she needs to show that her mother has an illness, injury, or disability, that she needed to provide necessary care for her mother, that she told the employer of the medical conditions, and that she requested an accommodation. I want to start with that in the reverse order on the accommodation piece. And the undisputed testimony is that she never requested an accommodation. And the statute explicitly requires that applicants who meet this exception must request an accommodation. This court has held that accommodations must be requested even when it seems to be what the court has called a mere technicality, and that's from the Kripe-Schreck decision, and even when it seems to lead to an inequitable result. The courts cannot supply that which the legislator has either purposely omitted or inadvertently overlooks. And what this comes down to is essentially an equitable argument that because there is nothing that could, that she believed could have happened, that she should be eligible for benefits because she's close enough. But the law also specifically prohibits equitable entitlement under Minnesota Statute 268.069, subdivision 3. In terms of legislative intent, that only comes into play when the statute's ambiguous. It's not ambiguous here. It just doesn't fit Ms. McCulloch's circumstances. So this court should not apply a waiver to the requirement that you request an accommodation. It should apply the statute as it's written. The next piece is that substantial evidence supports that Ms. McCulloch's mother did not have a serious illness, injury, or disability, for which she required necessary care. As Mr. Boyd discussed, there was information provided in the request for reconsideration that she has high blood pressure and asthma and other information suggesting she may have needed care, but this wasn't provided to the unemployment law judge during the hearing. The only information provided there was that she was elderly. To get to Judge Cochran's point, when she provided information in the request for reconsideration, the standard is whether the unemployment law judge abused his discretion in not ordering a new hearing. However, the judge wasn't required to order a new hearing because the outcome isn't changing with the new information. Even if Ms. McCulloch can establish that her mother had an illness, injury, or disability, the result stays the same because she needs to tell the employer about the condition, the medical condition, and she needs to request an accommodation. So even if she met that first part, that there was an illness, injury, or disability, it doesn't change the outcome of the decision. So there was no abuse of discretion in failing to order a new hearing. And the record does support the unemployment law judge's conclusion that there wasn't a medical condition sufficient to meet the requirements of the statute. She simply said elderly. When the unemployment law judge asked if she needed medical care, she just said needing assistance and care at home so she didn't have to leave. When he asked specifically if she needed specific medical assistance or care, her answer was just being her personal assistant to the outside world. And that's on page 20 of the transcript.
Ms. Freilich, given the impending pandemic that, at the time she provided her notice, I don't know that the pandemic was officially a pandemic in this country, but given the news reports about COVID and the age of her mother and the need to help her mother so that she didn't get exposed to COVID, why does that not fit within the medical necessity exception to provide necessary care because of illness, injury, or disability of an immediate family member of the applicant? I mean, certainly it's understandable why Ms. McCulloch would want to assist her mother in that situation.
And to be clear, we're not making a judgment on whether she made the right decision or this wasn't a decision she should have made. All we're arguing is whether she meets the exception for eligibility under the law. I don't think that Ms. McCulloch provided sufficient testimony during the hearing to show that what she did was medically necessary at that time. I think it's inappropriate to say that merely being elderly should be classified as an illness, injury, or disability. And at the time of the hearing, the evidence that's admitted into the record, that's all we have is that she's elderly. There's no other specific information. So that's insufficient to make a holding that that's an illness, injury, or disability.
And for purposes of our review of the ULJ's decision, the subsequent information about asthma and blood pressure that wasn't part of the evidentiary record, what is your view on whether it's appropriate to consider that information?
It is the only place it's appropriate to consider that information is when you're considering whether the unemployment law judge abused his discretion in not reopening the record. And first, this wasn't an argument that counsel made. And second, it wasn't an abuse of discretion because one of the elements that has to be met in order to require the judge to reopen the record is that you have to show that the information would change the outcome. And this information wouldn't change the outcome because she didn't inform the employer of the medical condition and she didn't make a request for an accommodation. So I want to be clear, if this court finds that the request for accommodation is required, as the statute states, then it doesn't matter whether Ms. McCullough's mother had a serious illness, injury, or disability. She has to meet all of the requirements in the statute to be eligible. So my focus is on this accommodation piece because this is undisputed. It hasn't changed. She's not arguing differently in her request for reconsideration or in her brief.
Would your position have been different if this had happened the end of March?
Yes. So the governor issued Executive Order 2005 on March 16th, and that was 3 days after the peacetime emergency was in place. And that waived strict compliance and instituted instead substantial compliance. So it's very possible that this decision could have been different in March. However, the law that's applied to separations is the law that's in place at the time of the separation. And that is in, one moment, I'm sorry, let me find my citation for that. That is in Gray versus Dogs and Cats Limited, 679 Northwest, 2nd edition, 182. It says it's basic fairness that someone is entitled to notice of what is expected before one can be punished for not doing what is expected. That case is a little bit different. The definition of employment misconduct changed and the separation occurred before the change, but the decision occurred after the change. So the issue is which version of the statute applied to that separation. And the court said that the law in effect at the time of the separation is what controls. So that's why we're, the executive order wasn't issued until March 16th. And so the waiver of strict compliance doesn't apply to this case. And it could, the result could have been different with that executive order in place. There are no other questions we asked. Oh, I'm sorry.
I do have a question about the PUA issue. In your brief, you asserted that there was a separate determination of eligibility that was mailed to Ms. McCullough, and that she can appeal that separately. I just want to be clear that that post-dated the decision in this case. You're not talking about the Heartland order.
Correct. In the process of briefing this, we discovered that that was still an open question. So there was a determination mailed on March 11th of 2022. She appealed that decision. An unemployment law judge issued, she appealed the determination and an unemployment law judge issued a decision on April 27th. The reconsideration period ended yesterday. I checked this morning and I do not see that she has filed a request for reconsideration yet, but if it was mailed or done some other way other than online, it could still be pending and hasn't been processed yet.
Okay, thank you.
With that, we ask that
I was gonna say, I don't see that any of my colleagues have a question for you and I don't either.
Thank you for your time. We request that the court affirm the unemployment law judge's decision.
Thank you very much. Mr. Boyd, any rebuttal?
You're muted, Mr. Boyd.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Thank you. Three particular points, if I may. First, with regard to Ms. McCulloch's communication to her employer as to the reasons she was leaving and her communications as to why, I would again direct the court to Exhibit 3 to the hearing, which was admitted into evidence and therefore was before the ULJ, in which she stated she told her employer she was relocating back to Connecticut due to the impending COVID to take care of my elderly mother. I believe that's quite significant in terms of communicating the reasons why. Again, as we all are aware at that point in time, the news was quite plentiful in terms of the potential harms and dangers threatened by the pandemic, particularly to the elderly, and why they were at heightened risks. I believe that does qualify either as a medical condition or as a disability under the statute. And that information would certainly be implied by her statement as to her reasons for moving back to take care of her elderly mother, particularly here where the Mr. Swanstrom's daughters would have had those same concerns and the same knowledge with regard to their own elderly and disabled father. Secondly, with regard to the legislative requirement that the exception mandates the employee make a request for an accommodation, I believe that the law states that the legislature did not or would not have intended to impose an absurd requirement. Here, asking for an accommodation where there was no possible accommodation would be an absurd requirement. And I've tried to think of what go ahead.
What about a temporary leave of absence? I mean, at that point, certainly no one expected this COVID situation to turn into something that lasted as long as it did last. I don't think anyone knew how long it would last, but I don't think there's any suggestion in the record that there was any thought that it would last for any prolonged period at that point in time.
I don't think the record is clear on that, but as we know from our own recollections, it was unknown. And here we have a situation where Ms. McCulloch and her mother maybe not omniscient, but they were on to the threats of the pandemic more quickly than even our governors of Minnesota or Connecticut. They recognized that this was a very serious situation and its duration would not have been known. And therefore, the proposal of an open-ended leave of absence would not be a, quote, reasonable accommodation, which is what the statute provides. Okay. So that would be my response. The third point I'd like to respond to is the question I believe Judge Kirk raised, whether or not this would have been different if this occurred a month later. And I believe that's quite telling. Again, Ms. McCulloch and her mother were on to the severity of this situation sooner than the governors of either Minnesota or Connecticut, both of whom declared these emergencies in March. And oh, what a difference a month makes. Here, because Ms. McCulloch and her mother acted promptly and with dispatch because they recognized the severity of the situation, as a result of that, Ms. McCulloch is going to be denied benefits or denied eligibility. And that is inappropriate, I think, under either the Bray versus Dogs and Cats case or any other measure of reasonable application of this statute. Again, I can't fathom that the legislature intended to be so arbitrary as to impose a meaningless requirement that could not have been met. There was no reasonable accommodation she could have proposed, and yet she would be denied benefits because she didn't propose any accommodation. For those reasons, we respectfully ask the court to reverse the ULJ's determination and hold that Ms. McCulloch is eligible for unemployment benefits.
Thank you. The case has been well briefed and well argued. And Mr. Wood, I wanted to thank you on behalf of the court for your service and the MSBA service in providing legal representation to people like your clients. So the case is submitted and we will have our decision out within the statutory timeframe. That concludes our oral calendar. We are going to adjourn and consider our non-oral calendar next. Thank you very much. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.